Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Yudchet of Melachim Bet. It is a perek in which we can largely enjoy watching a Melech Tzadik, a righteous king, perform and live his life. There will be some tensions, of course, but in contrast to other Prakim and many of the Prakim of Melachim, we won't have to contend with the presence of continuing sin in a large way, as we've seen before. So Pasuk Aleph says, "Vayhi bishnat shalosh Hoshea ben Elam Melech Yisrael." Malach Chizkiah ben Achaz Melech Yehuda. So it's Achaz's son, so we might have worried that he will follow in the path of his father and be evil. And it's in the third year of Hoshea ben Elah that he takes over. And then in Pasuk Bet we see ben Ashim Chamesh Shana Hayavim Olcho. He was 25 when he took over the reins from his father Achaz. Ve'ashim Vatesha Shana Malach Yerushalayim, and he rules for 29 years in Yerushalayim. Hashem Imo Avi Bat Zechariah, and his mother was named Avi, but the daughter of Zechariah. And then Pasuk Gimel, the Pasuk we've been waiting for. Ben Vayasa Yashar Bene Hashem Kechol Asher Asah David Aviv, and he does what's right. And other kings we've seen rack low, just not quite as much as David, but here it's everything that David did. He takes away the Bamot. Mishibarta matzevot, and he breaks up or destroys the matzevot. The other way, my English has pillars, but often matzevah is seen as being one stone, and a mazbeach as being many stones that you sacrifice on. Vecharat ta'asheran, destroys the Asherah trees. Vechitat nechash ha'nechoshet asher asa Moshe. And he ground into dust the copper, the brass or copper serpent that Moshe had done. Right, there's the story in Chumash where the Jews are punished by Hashem with nechashim, and Moshe makes a nechash and a choshet, and then anybody who looks at the nechash and a choshet lives, and anybody who doesn't dies. And the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah points out that it's not the nechash that did it, of course, but that it's when you looked at the nechash, you thought of Hashem, and you thought about tshuva, that's what would save you. But our pasuk here tells us, ki ad yamim ahima hayu v'nei Yisrael mikatrim lo, that until that time, the Jews have been offering sacrifices to it. So the Radak wonders about this question, about how it is that you have this Nechash and Nechoshet still around, and he first quotes his own pshat, and then he quotes Chazal's pshat. So both are interesting. His pshat was, because he's bothered by the following question, that there were kings before Chizkiyahu who were good, not who got rid of Bamot, but who had gotten rid of Avodah Zarah, Asa, and Yehoshaphat, and they didn't get rid of this. So the Radak thinks that the simple reading is that it wasn't from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu that the Jews started sacrificing to it. It was only after that. It was in the time of Achaz. It was a new Avodah Zarah, a new problem for the Jewish people created by Chizkiyahu's father. And that's why when Chizkiyahu comes along, he gets rid of it and destroys it. But he then quotes Chazal, and this is actually an interesting Gemara, a crucial Gemara in Chazal's conception of how the world works. It's Gemara in Chulin on Daf Vav Amid Bet. But the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who we think of as the editor of the Mishnah, who had put together the Mishnah, so the Gemara tells us that a certain Rabbi Yeshua ben Zaruz ben Chomish Rabbi Meir came before Rabbi, and he gave testimony that Rabbi Meir, his uncle, is ben Chomish Rabbi Meir, his brother-in-law, of Rabbi Meir, that he ate Oleh Shel Yerek Beveit She'an. He ate some vegetables in Beit She'an, meaning that it was outside of Eretz Yisrael and didn't need to have Meiser given from it. And so, based on that, Rebbe said, okay, Beit She'an and everything, I'm not sure that Beit She'an is our Beit She'an, I'm not passing a halakha, that's not what the point of the topic is. But based on that, Rebbe said Beit She'an was mutter to everybody. So people came to him and said, how could that be? A place that all of your forefathers, they thought it was Asur, and they worried that you had to give Truma and Meiser and things like that from it, that you had to tithe there, as if it was part of Eretz Yisrael fully, you're going to say it's mutter and you don't have to. And he, Rebbe, quotes them our pasuk, and he says, could it be that Asa didn't come along and Yehoshaphat didn't come along and they didn't destroy it when they destroyed everything? So he says, no, makom hishiru li avotai litgaderbo. My forefathers have left me place and room in which to accomplish, which means that in Rebbe's conception, when we see Chizkiyahu doing this, it in fact had been an Avodah Zarah almost from the beginning, or not quite Nevertheless, but they're bowing down to it as a way to get through to Hashem, because they would misunderstand the miracle from Chumash, and they would think that the miracle in Chumash was that the miracle in Chumash was that the Nechash itself healed, and therefore they would get caught up in bowing down to it. And then when the Tanakh notes that Asa and Yehoshaphat come along and they get rid of Avodah Zarah, that they left this. Now, they left this, we have to assume it's not that they left it because they believed in it, but it suggests something that's sort of been a running theme for me, that the horizons in which they operated and the ability even of a great king, even of kings who we see as being on the right side and doing the right thing and trying to do the right thing, they are not necessarily able to do all that one would ideally have wanted them to do, and so that even though Tanakh doesn't blame them for it, it's not that they have culpability for it, it should not lead us to believe that they were perfect in every which way. Meaning, in Radak's view, it's impossible that Asa and Yehoshaphat, good guys, trying to do what the right thing is, Tanakh telling us they're great guys, that they would leave Anachash and Achoshet around, impossible. But in Chazal's view, in this Gemara, they're saying, it's not a question of impossible. They perhaps didn't have the ability to do so, and we don't get into why. So there could be many reasons as to how it worked out or why it worked out that they couldn't do so. And then Rebbe comes along, and he is the one who has, in our case, Kiskio comes along, he is the one who has the great merit to be able to get rid of that, in the same way that the fact that nobody ever was Matir Beit Sha'an before is not in and of itself proof that Beit Sha'an had to be part of Eretz Yisrael for Meiser and be Asur in those terms. So that notion of Makom Hishivuli Avotai Dikadeva was an important one. It's a very important one in Halacha, because later Rishonim and later Achronim would come along and have a new idea. So you might say, well, you know, if the Rambam and Rashi and the Ramban never had this idea, how could you have this idea? So the answer is Makom Hishivu Lanu Avoseinu Lihikadeva. So that perspective of Chazal comes from here and plays out many, many times in Halacha and Hashkafa, and in just our ability to go on and to build and to see Judaism in new lights with new chidushim. So that really based on here. Then the end of the pasuk says, "Vayikra lo nechushtan," and he called it nechushtan. So the Radak says, the Radak quotes and Rashi says, most of our assumptions are that nechushtan is a negative name. So Rashi says, "Lashon bizayon," klomer matzorch bazeinu al nechash nechashit. He calls it the name Nechushtan, to make it fun of it, like you're calling it by a nickname, calling it by a diminutive, because it diminutes it, whatever, that's not an English word, but it makes fun of it. Now, why does he need to make fun of it? If Chizkiyahu is coming along, and he is ridding Eretz Yisrael of Avodah Zarah, and he is making this big play that we can't worship anything but Hashem, as he is, so, and he has the power now, and he has the political power, and he has the military power, he has the monarchical power to destroy it and to break it up, then why does he need to call it Nechushtan? So I think the answer is in the question. I think that it shows that for all that Chizkiyahu is doing the right thing, he nonetheless had to contend with forces around him. And that just destroying it and grinding it and throwing it to the wind, as Chazal think that he did, would not have been enough to really wipe it out from the memories and the life experience of at least some segment of the Jewish people. And that the calling it Nechushtan is going to add to his ability to remove it from their consciousness as a viable alternative. The Radak also suggests, maybe not, maybe it was the Jewish people called it Nechushtan, but it was a fond name for it. It was a way of being more related to it. So that would be the Radak's thing, but that's not the predominant view. And the predominant view just emphasizes for us how hard it was, even for Chizkiyahu, to really rid the Jewish people of this problem. There's another discussion in Chazal about why it is he has to grind it. Either it belonged to the Jewish people, and therefore it was of Asar V'Hana'ah, and therefore he had to do it, or he did it for emphasis, and it really belonged to Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore, if it belonged to Moshe Rabbeinu, meaning if Moshe was the one who made it and did it, then the bowing down to it couldn't make it Asar Bahana, so it couldn't make it prohibited to get any benefit from. So if that's true, then why would it be that Chizkiyahu wouldn't feel the need to grind it and throw it to the wind? And the answer would be just to make an emphatic point to the Jewish people that again would show us how much he felt the need to emphasize this and how hard it was to really wean them from it. It wasn't like he could just come along and say, you know, we've been doing the wrong thing, we really have to worship Hashem, and they say, oh, okay, now we understand, and thank you very much for teaching us this lesson. He had to really make the point very emphatically. So pasuk hey, Hashem Elokei Yisrael batach, v'acharav lo hayach hamahu b'chol malchei Yehuda v'asher hayu lefanav. and he trusted in Hashem, and like nobody after him, and those who were before him, and not even among those who were before him, meaning that Chizkiyahu's trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is seen as being remarkable and unique. Pasuk Vav, Vayidbak b'Hashem lo sar me'acharav, Vayishmor mitzvotav, Asher tzivat Hashem et Moshe. And he clung to Hashem, and he didn't stray from after him, and he observed all of his mitzvot that Hashem commanded Moshe. Vayah Hashem imo b'chol asher yetzei yaskil, Hashem was with him, and in everything that he went out to do, he was successful. And he rebelled against the king of Ashur, and he did not serve him. He didn't pay the tribute. And he cut plishtim at azavet kula, and he beat back the plishtim. From a tower, from just places with a small tower until fortified cities. I mean, he's very successful. He's successful militarily. He's successful in all ways. Pasuk ted vayihi bashana harviit lamelach Hizkiyahu. So in the fourth year of Chizkiyahu, which is the seventh year of Hoshea ben Elah, you might want to ask yourself, we won't deal with it now, but why here all of a sudden we choose to reference the two times towards each other? Perhaps because the coming of Ashur is a significant event both for Hoshea and for Chizkiyahu, but different time. Allah Shalmaneser Melech Ashur al-Shamron v'yatzar Allah. He comes to lay siege to Shamron. It was in the sixth year of Chizkiyahu, after 3 years of siege, that he in fact captures it. Which was the ninth year of Hoshea, which is when Shamron is captured. And then he exiles the people of Israel, of the northern kingdom, to Ashur. He leaves them in these places, and I've mentioned in the previous parak, and I'll mention it here again. The Chazal's tradition, at least in their time, was that therefore you still had to worry that people from these kinds of areas, and maybe even from other parts of it, maybe after that they got mixed in, that maybe there are still Jews among the non-Jewish nations because of this pasuk. Pasuk Yudbet, just a reminder, Allah Shem Tov Shem Uv, Kol Hashem Okehem, Vayavod Beritoi, Kol Hashem Tiva, Moshe Eben Hashem, Volo Shem Uv, Volo Asu, because they transgressed the covenant and they did not follow Hashem. You might wonder whether this had something to do with Chizkiyahu as well, learning the lesson from them, but it's not clear. The post doesn't say it to us. So the question of, was Chizkiyahu from the beginning of his kingship perfectly great, or did this impact on him? With that, we're not told here. So now we get into another event, another problem in Chizkiyahu's life. In Pasuk Yud Gimel, in the 14th year, so this is 10 years later, Alasan Khiriv Melech Ashur al Kolare Yehuda Habitsurod Vaidbasem, he captures all the fortified cities. He comes against the fortified cities of Yehuda of the southern kingdom. Vaishlach Chizkiyah Melech Yehuda al Melech Ashur Lachisha. Chizkiyahu sends to the king of Ashur who was in Lachish. So remember that Lachish where Amatsya ran away to when there was a Keshur, when there was a rebellion against him, and Rashi had thought that perhaps he lived there in safety. So there seems to have been some sort of contention and seats of power between Lachish and Yerushalayim. Lemor Chatati Shuv me'elai, he said, I sinned, I was wrong. Please go back. Eid asher titin alai esa, and I will pay you whatever tribute you make me pay. Vayasa melech ashur al chizkiyah melech yudah shalosh me'ot kikar kesef, 300 talents of silver, shloshim kikar zahav, and 30 of gold. So, just as the psukim tell us this, it's nice to watch or to think about the fact that this is a king who the psukim told us has Hashem on his side, and everything that he tries to do, he's successful at. And yet, it's not inconsistent with that we would find him needing to pay tribute to Ashur. So it's not necessarily true that even the best of kings has to have right away complete and total political independence. The fact that he has to pay a tribute to Ashur, as long as he has the money, would seem to be, in the psukim's presentation, not a contradiction to him being a favorite of Hashem. So Hashem helping him out. He gives him all the money found in his storehouses and in the Beit HaMikdash. And at that time, kitzatz the daltot, sounds like he cuts off the doors door frames and door and the lintels and the door step that you step over. So that gold, the pasuk tells us, Chizkiyahu had replaced from the time of Shlomo, and he had put the gold on, and now he had to, and it's gold plating, so he had to So the Radak at least says that it doesn't mean that he cut down the doors. It means that he scraped off the gold that they had been plated with, and then sent that to the king of Ashur. So all is not perfectly well, meaning there is an economic problem here a little bit, and yet we don't see that as a problem within Chizkiyahu's relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Something worth paying attention to. A lot of times we think that perfection or good has to mean perfection. And if it's not perfection, then we think that means that we're not really perceiving good. And that's not necessarily true. I just actually, this past Shabbos, had somebody, I have, for those who do or don't know, I have a book that I wrote once based on, it's a murder mystery, and it's available on Amazon. It's called Murderer in the Mikdash. And I discussed there the possibility, I tried to envision a time of Mashiach having been there, but not everything is perfect yet. And they're working towards perfection, and it's a whole discussion. It's a murder mystery, and whatever it is, but somebody this past Shabbos just came up to me and said he was very upset. He thought it was a very cynical view of the times of Mashiach. And I said, I wasn't sure why he thought it was cynical. He said, because there's so many things that aren't right. So I said, but it's so much more right than what we have today, and that could be an excellent time. So here too, I think that the experience of Chizkiyah suggests this. And I had a teacher in high school who every Yom HaAtzmaut would talk about a Gemara that discussed why Chizkiyah wasn't Mashiach. And he had his own fort. He said, the Gemara says in one of the possibilities, Chizkiyah didn't say Shira when Hashem later on will save him. And that's why he wasn't Mashiach. And therefore he said, that's what we have to say, Shira. So leaving aside the current political question, but the idea that Chizkiyah tells us things about what the Messianic era could look like are important ones. And then that suggests that Chizkiyah, having had to scrape off the gold, doesn't necessarily take away from the possibility that he could have been an excellent, excellent generation in which we would think of everything as going well. So that somewhat tells us that our vision of perfection, if it has to be 100% perfect, might be wrong, that maybe if we live in a time that's 20% perfect and we got to a time that was 85% perfect, we would need to recognize that as also a huge bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's Pasuk Ted Zayin, Pasuk Yud Zayin, a new incident. And so the Radak points out that this incident happens after a few years, and Chizkiyahu again stops paying the tribute to Ashur, and so Ashur is going to come back and do something about that. Now the question of why Chizkiyahu does or doesn't pay tribute is not referenced here. It doesn't seem that Chizkiyahu consults with Yeshayahu and decides it. It seems that Chizkiyahu just decides it on his own. So that question is one we've noted and thought about plenty of times before, and bears noticing each time. That for all that there are Nevi'im, it's not clear that you asked about every single decision that you made. So Chizkiyahu, with the tribute here, would seem to have made the decision on his own. The king of Ashur stands. Now our pasuk says three people came, but Rashi or Radak, one of them, assumes that it wasn't all three of them. This time, that the first time it was really just Rav Shakeh, and that later on the other two will come. But the pasuk is telling us now that the impact was going to be they have this big delegation and they have a great army with them. Vayalu vayavo Yerushalayim, come to Yerushalayim. Vayalu vayavo vayamdu bitalat habrichah elyon. Understanding at the tunnel that Chizkiyahu had dug to bring in water, and they're standing at the front of it, meaning at a place where they're near the walls of Yerushalayim, Hashem Mesilat Tzedei Koveis, which is on the highway where the washers used to go out to wash their clothing. And they call out to the king. So the Radak points out that the king wasn't there. They call out to whoever's down there, the washers, and the washers go into the city, and they send the word, and the word gets to the king, and the king sends out to them, he sends out to them three of his officers, to see what's going on. The Radak points out that Shevna coming out here is a problem because there is a nevuah in Yeshayahu against Shevna or about Shevna, and that Shevna rebels against Chizkiyahu. And the way Chazal have it is that Shevna, during the time of the siege, and there's a siege here that we don't, that we're not told, oh, there was a siege and then this happened. We're just told that Rav Shakeh comes to tell him this stuff. So during the siege, apparently they could still get out to wash, and they knew about that. All these things were going on. But Yeshayahu has a nevuah about Shevna, that he rebelled. Chazal's vision is that Shevna got a group of people, had a group of people who were willing to surrender to Ashur. They're willing to throw open the gates of the city, and they send an arrow into the Assyrian camp with a note on it saying, Shevna and his group want to make peace with you, and Chizkiyahu and his group are the ones who don't. And then they actually go out. They find a way to sneak out of the gates of the city. But the Gemara has it that Gavriel, the angel Gavriel, comes along and he closes the gates right after Shevna, locking in the rest of the group. And Shevna ends up going out on his own and all these kinds of things. So the Radak says, so what's he doing here in this among these officers that Chizkiyahu was sending out if he's such a bad person? So there's two possibilities. Either he had not yet rebelled, one possibility, or he had already rebelled but was still keeping it secret. And that again tells us that for all that we're portraying this as an ideal time, Chizkiyahu has problems. He has difficulties. And we're going to see more of those in the parak. He has some difficulties in handling people. There are, and again, so you say, so how could that be perfect? Well, if Yerushalayim has, I don't know, 5,000 people in it at this time, total, and Shevna has 20 friends, so that's a very small percentage. And yet, it would be a significant problem if Shevna is an important officer and he takes 20 friends, even if he takes 100 friends. So 100 out of 1,000 is 10%. So 100 out of 5,000 is 2%. It's only 2%. If I had to do that, 98% of a group, right? We elect presidents in this country. If you get a 60% of the popular vote, you know, that is a huge victory. But it means 40%. We're not happy with that. We're against that. So here, if 98% of the people are behind Chizkiyahu, it still might leave 100 people who, which is not an insignificant number as a group, who could be against him. So another point to pay attention to, and it might have even been in Radak's conception, maybe Shevna hadn't revealed himself yet, that you don't even know who they are when they're around you, and that. So, Pasuk Yud-Tet, Vayomer lehem Rav Shakei, Imruna el Chizkiyahu, Ko amar ha-melech ha-gadol, melech Ashur, Ma ha-bitachon hazeh asher batachta. So Rav Shakei says, tell your king, this is what the king of Ashur says, what are you trusting on to try to rebel against me and not pay tribute to me? Amarta af devar sefataim. Itzag v'ra la milchama. Radak quotes two possibilities. Amarta af devar sefataim. You thought that words of your lips and ideas would be instead of having to fight a war. So one possibility of af devar sefataim is that you thought that your tefillot would save you. You don't have to fight. All you have to do is turn to Hashem. Right? That was what quotes the name of his father, and quotes to Ben Ezra, who says that you think you have a great idea because you can, that you just told them that you have a great idea. You convinced them that you would be able to save everybody with your heroism, with your war, with your abilities to fight. So he says, all of this thinking, all of these ideas, it's not going to tell you, but who are you really relying on? Kim Arata to be in rebelling against me. You're really trusting in leaning on a broken reed on Egypt, who are not really reliable. They rely on them. And it breaks a hole in your hand. So the imagery is, if you have a reed that you're leaning on as a cane, instead of something solid like wood, and you put your palm on the top of it to lean on it, well, it'll puncture you as it breaks rather than helping you. Which is what Paro is like. He's really unreliable to all those who rely on him. So the truth is, this part of it would seem to be largely true, because we know and we've seen in Tanakh before people relying on Egypt, and Egypt has not really appeared in a role here to provide meaningful assistance. So that would seem to be true, that they always had this hope, this dream of creating an Egyptian alliance or an Egyptian option, but it never seems to come true. Puzzikov bet v'chitam runelai. So this is the crux of the matter, because that's not what Chizkiyah was really thinking. V'chitam runelai. El Hashem Elokinu batachnu. If you say to me, we're trusting in our God, so Nayir is something that also reveals a lot about the mindset of the people of the time. Not Chizkiyahu, but everybody else, and explains to us a lot about why the Bamot have stuck around for so long. So look at what Rabbi Shakei says in Puzzikov bet. Halo hu asher heisir Chizkiyahu et Bamotav v'mizbukhotav. How could you trust in God? Chizkiyahu has gone around removing and destroying his bamot and his altars. But you know, the Yudah Yishalayim is telling all of Yehuda, all of the southern kingdom, and all of the city, to come to one mizbech. In other words, Chizkiyahu has reduced the net sacrificing to God, because there are so many fewer altars now. So how could you think that God is going to save you? So it's not that he's right that it's interesting. It's that he could say it and think of it as a reasonable thing to say. And we're going to see in a minute. And he's not only addressing Chizkiyahu. So the fact that it shows you what the mindset of the time was, that it's shocking. Right? Until now, there have been, you name the number, but there have been 722 altars throughout Malchut Yehuda to Hashem. And once a day, everybody offers a sacrifice on the other altars, and 10 in Yerushalayim. So you have 732 net sacrifices a day to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. comes Chizkiyahu and destroys the Bamot and destroys the Mizbechot and says you have to come to Yerushalayim. So 25% of people come to Yerushalayim every day. I'm picking a huge number. It's obviously wrong. It'll still be true that there aren't even 200 sacrifices a day. So we've now cut down 532 sacrifices a day to HaKadosh Baruch. So if Hashem likes sacrifice, and it's an important thing, as it is in Yerushalayim in the Mizbeach, at the Mizbeach, at the Beit HaMikdash, it is an important thing. So then Chizkiyahu has cut it by much more than two-thirds. So how can you trust in Hashem? How do you think that Hashem is going to save Chizkiyahu? So if you don't have Hashem and you don't have anybody else, any allies, so he says, let's make a bet. I'll give you 2,000 horses, right? I'll spot you. It's like, I'll fight you with one hand tied behind my back. I can give you the horses and you don't even have riders for them. So how could you beat back even one of my master's lesser servants, lesser rulers, meaning lesser officers? You couldn't even beat his sub-army, the division of his army. But if you're going to trust Egypt, going to come to you with riders and horses and chariots. And then another point. You think it's without Hashem that I came to this place to destroy it? Hashem said to me, come destroy it, again because of the Bamot issue. So in Pasuk of Vayomer, Yakim and Chalkiyahu, Veshevnav, Yoachel, Rav Shakei, Daber, Nal, Avadecha, Aramit, so Eliakim, and so the guys who are there on the wall say to Rav Shakai, say, don't talk in Hebrew, right? Speak in Aramaic, because we understand Aramaic, and Rashi says we are palace people, and therefore we have to know more languages. But don't speak Yehudit, which we'll assume is Hebrew, in so that the people on the walls could hear you. So, there's an interesting Ramban, where the Ramban says that the Tokacha in Devarim, speaks about Yisa Hashem Alecha Goy Meirachok, that Hashem will bring you a faraway nation. And that'll be Rome. And that's part of his vision, his understanding that the Tokacha in Vayikra is about the first Beit HaMikdash, and the Tokacha in Devarim about the second Beit HaMikdash. And so he says, and that's not true here. And how do you know? Because the people, the nations that exiled them here, were Ashur for the northern kingdom, and Bavel for the southern kingdom. But Ashur, he says, wasn't a faraway nation, because you see that they spoke the language of this nation already, at least the officers, the high-ranking, the nobility of the time, spoke the language of these people. So that doesn't fit. That you don't know him, and you don't, and lo tekir l'shono, you don't know his language. So that's a little interesting, because later on we'll see that when it comes to Bavel, at the time of Chizkiyahu, Bavel really was a faraway place. And yet, by the time that they get destroyed by Bavel in the end of Vayit Rishon, they already knew them and recognized them, and maybe that's what the Ramban is saying. That doesn't qualify as a Goy Mirachok. The Goy Mirachok is a nation that comes, and when they destroy you, you don't know them. So that's a complicated discussion, but one interesting to start raising and thinking about, but not fully for here. So they say this to him. Now we see what Rav Shakei says in Pesuk of Zion. V'yom Aleihem Rav Shakei, Ha'al Adonecha Ve'elecha Shelachani Adoni, have I been sent to talk to you and to your master? L'daber Adarim Ha'ile, Hello, Alanashim, Hayoshvim Alachoma. I was sent to talk to the people sitting on the walls. In other words, Rav Shakei is saying, I'm sent here to send a message to everybody because I want the people to understand what their king is getting them into, and it's almost in the hopes of stirring up some kind of a rebellion. And they're coming here. Now, what are they coming here to do? Lachol et. So the Kri is Chorehim, and the Ketiv is, I'm sorry, the Ketiv is Chorehim, and we read it as Tsoatam, which means their dung. Another kriyuchtiv, another difference between what's written in the Tanakh and what we read, to drink the water of their, meaning their urine, imachem. In other words, there's a siege going on that the Pesukim didn't bother to mention to us. There's a siege going on, and the siege is so significant that the people are being forced to eat and drink these things that people don't ordinarily do. And Rav Shakei is coming to talk to them about it. So the image of what's going on is already much more striking. There is a siege, and the people, because of the siege, are being forced to eat things they wouldn't ordinarily eat, and Chizkiyahu is still sticking with his rebellion, and Rav Shakei is coming to try to convince the people that there's no value in this. And then we already noted that Shevna seems to buy into this and to agree that he wants to make peace. Just notice an interesting debate between the Ramban and the Rambam that has some relevance here, because Ramban points to these psukim as showing that the Rambam was wrong. The Rambam claimed that one of the ways that you know that Hebrew is a Lashon Kodesh, or one of the reasons that the reason that Hebrew is called a Lashon Kodesh, is called a language, a holy language, is it doesn't have terms, it doesn't have words for various bodily functions that we think of as being less than appetizing, less than appropriate to talk about straight out, and bodily actions as well. So he doesn't think there's really a word for marital relations in the fullest sense of that word, or words for things like this. There are many points to second say that's not true, and the reason why it's called Lashon Kodesh is because we do divrei kedusha with it. We do holy things with it. So that's a very interesting difference of perspective between them. I mean, the Rambam is thinking that that true sanctity, it completely ignores certain realities of life. And the Ramban is saying, no, the realities of life are the realities of life, and that can be included in a language, and it doesn't affect its sanctity. What makes sanctity for something is that you do sanctified things with it, and that's what it's called Lashon Kodesh for. In any case, to return to our parak in Pasuk Chaf Chet, Vayamod Rav Shakei Vayikav Kol Gadol Yudisu, now he calls out, now that they've gotten it clear, he calls out in great language, in loud voice, in Hebrew, Vayidaber Vayomer Shimu Dvar HaMelech Gadol Melech Ashur, he says, listen to the words of the king of Ashur. So now that he's been clear with them, that he's doing it to them, he drops the pretense, and he talks straight to them. And now see what he says, which is different than what he said before. Pasuk Chaf Tet, Ko Amar HaMelech Al Yasi Al Yashi Lachem Chizkiyah, don't let Chizkiyah fool you, because he can't save you. Don't let Chizkiyahu fool you or convince you that Hashem will save you. I tell you, it's the name of Hashem, that Hashem will save us. And that the city will not be given in the hands of the king of Ashur. Don't listen to him. Because this is what the king of Ashur says. Make peace with me and come out to me, meaning open the gates of the city and surrender. Go back to eating the product of your hands, from your vines and from your date trees and from your and from your wells. Fig trees, and from your wells. Now it's not going to be that I'm going to let you just sit here, because that was not Ashur's way. Ashur's plan was, as we've seen with the northern kingdom, that when you conquered a nation after they rebelled against you, you had to move them, and you had to move them to avoid further rebellion. So you could have it good. You wouldn't be under siege anyway. You wouldn't be starving. You wouldn't be eating your dung and your urine until I come and take you to a land that's like yours. So Rashi and Chazal noted they don't say the land that's better than yours, because Rashi says, because he knew they would never believe that. Just a thing about Eretz Yisrael, a plug for us to realize how wonderful Eretz Yisrael is when it's, when it's got people of righteousness living on it. So he didn't even try to claim that it would be better than Eretz Yisrael. So it's a land like your land. Eretz Dagan, V'tirosh, Eretz Lechem, Ukramim, a land of grain and of wine and of bread and of vineyards. Eretz Zeit Yitzhar Udvash, of oil from the olives and oil of honey. When you live and you won't die, yasit is an interesting word, right? We use hasata to mean somebody tries to lure you away from Hashem. Rav Shakei is saying, don't let Chizkiyahu be mesit you towards Hashem, saying that Hashem will save us. In Pasuk Lamed Gimel, ha-hatzil, hitzilu, Elohei ha-goyim ha-sharatzo, miyad melech Ashur. Did any of the other gods save their nations from the hands of King of Ashur? Where are all the other gods of Hamat and Arpad and Sfarvayim and Hana and Iva? And did they save Shomron from my hands? So that means that already, you could have imagined him saying, did God save Shomron from my hands? But Shomron wasn't identified anymore with God enough that he would have said that. He just said, did they save, right? Who are all these gods to save their lands from my hands, that Hashem would save Yerushalayim from my hands? The people didn't answer. Because the king said, do not respond to Rav Shakei. Now, the question is, did they not answer? And they're thinking to themselves the whole time, you've got the whole picture wrong. Meaning, is it Rav Shakei is completely out of touch with what the populace is thinking? And they know that we believe in
one God, not many gods. And it's not a question of whether our God is stronger than Ashur's God. And therefore, the proof that the gods of Sfarvayim weren't as strong as the king of Ashur is irrelevant to us. Does Rosh Hashanah not know that? And the people do know that? Or, I think more likely, were the people, even after Chizkiyahu has removed all the bamot and all the mizbechot, the people are still one step removed from that belief, and they're not sure that that's not true. So this is an example of where crucial, basic theological ideas are vital. Because the whole Tana, the whole claim of Rav Shakeh only makes sense if you have a fundamental, basic error. It's not about whether or not you can plant this seed on Shabbos in a pot, right, in an al-kitchen or in a pot that doesn't have any holes in it. It's not a technical halakha question. This is a very fundamental issue, and apparently the people weren't firmly in control of that. That's especially true because in Pasuk Lamed Zayin, Chazal's understanding is that Rav Shakeh is Yisrael Mumar, is a Jew who left, who became an apostate and joined Ashur. And they think that because in Pasuk Lamed Zayin, it says, Vayavo el Yakim ben Chilkiyah asher al abayit v'shena ha-sofer v'yuach ben Asaf ha-maskir al Chizkiyahu kru'ei bigadim. They come to, the officers come to Chizkiyahu and their clothing is torn. Vayagidu lo divrei Rav Shakeh, and they tell him Rav Shakeh said, so why is their clothing torn? Their clothing is torn because they've heard Rav Shakeh be migandef, revile the name of God. So if they've heard Rav Shakeh revile the name of God, the halacha is, when we learn the halacha from here, the halacha is you have to tear your clothing. So in fact, the Gemara says that if you ever have a trial for somebody who's a migandef, so migandef is a crime punishable by Beis Din, punishable by death by Beis Din. So if a person has been migandef, the way they would conduct the trial is they would conduct most of the trial with using appellations, nicknames, other terms, euphemisms for what actually happened. And then once they were convinced that there was enough evidence to really consider it, they would clear the room and have the witnesses say it one time, and then the judges would have to tear their clothing because they're hearing the giduf, they're hearing the blasphemy from the person. The problem is that you only have to tear your clothing for blasphemy if it's a Jew who's doing the blasphemy. So therefore, Chazal suggests Rav Shakeh is Yisrael Mumar. Now, if that's true, if you accept that perspective, that would mean, though, that that he grew up among the Jewish people, and that would suggest that he had some connection or some understanding of the way Jews thought. Now, maybe he came from the Northern Kingdom and he misunderstood how the Southern Kingdom thought, but it strongly suggests that when he says these are ideas that were at least in some group of people, and certainly in the Radak presenting the Shevna's rebellion is, and Chazal's understanding the Shevna's rebellion was that he wanted to make peace, it seems like he sort of bought into it. So that shows you some of the challenge that Chizkiyahu faced, that he still had a populace that for all that they're obedient to him, they are teetering, they're just on the edge of not accepting or not believing exactly what Rav Shakeh is trying to claim, the claim being that our God is just our God. Right, on Elokei Haaretz, as we saw in the Northern Kingdom, that you could worship many gods, including our God. So that's a fundamental basic error that Chizkiyahu is working hard to try to uproot. This perek would suggest that he has not yet uprooted it fully, and the perek leaves us not knowing exactly what's going to happen. We have Chizkiyahu, who's a great king, who does, like no other king, going all the way back to David, he removes the bamot, he is turning the people back towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Gemara's perception. Chizkiyahu insisted that everybody also learn Torah, so that they not only, I said they have fundamental theological questions here, the Gemara's perception is that at some point in his kingdom, he made sure that everybody knew halakha so well, they even knew like all the deep laws of Taros that generally are seen as being the kind of thing that only scholars have a firm handle on, only really Talmidei Chachamim have a firm handle on, and yet you have all these issues, and he is now struggling, and we're going to see more of this struggle in the coming chapters, he is now struggling with how to handle the invasion of Ashur and how to beat it back and what will happen with it and what's going on. And so we will see more of this in the coming days. Have a great day.